Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, it was a big day in Dublin last Saturday as finally the two Luas services in Dublin connected up. It was the first time in decades that a tram ran past the GPO. But it used to happen all the time. We're joined by Michael Corcoran, President of the Transport Museum Society of Ireland. Michael, good afternoon to you.
Afternoon.
In its heyday, could you describe for us what kind of tram service there was in Dublin?
It was very extensive. There were over 100 kilometres of route. And there was a nominal fleet of 330 trams, of which about 280 would have been in regular service.
And comparatively speaking, did we have one of the biggest tram services in Dublin compared to other European countries, for instance?
In these islands, it was reckoned to be about the sixth or seventh in size. And when you compare it to the likes of London and Manchester and Liverpool, which were huge, that is saying a lot.
Yeah. And so what kind of, how far out would these tram services have gone, Michael?
The longest routes were to Dalkey, Lucan and Howth. And most of the other ones were within what was the pre-1900 city boundary. Up to 1900, the Dublin city boundary was very largely the canals and the circular roads. Mm. But you had independent townships outside that, such as Rathmines and Pembroke. And they were urban areas in which the tramway company was glad to run, whereas they weren't too keen on going out into the county area.
Right. And did the tram go to Howth, or there just was a tram service in Howth?
There was both.
Right.
There was the Dublin number 31 route that ran from Nelson Pillar to Howth, and between Sutton Station and Howth Station via the summit, there was the Hill of Howth tramway.
Right.
Run by the railway.
Did those two things connect up with each other?
No. They didn't connect up. They certainly joined each other, but
right,
they didn't
yeah.
connect up.
Yeah. And the reason why I asked that, obviously, because I live out in that part of town, but also... Would it be fair to say that the tram network was far more extensive on the south side of Dublin City than on the north side of Dublin City?
Oh yes, first of all, the south side was far more developed than the north side. The north side was tiny at the beginning of the 20th century. And indeed, I recently saw a report by a drainage engineer which was compiled in the 1870s. And north of the River Talca and even north of the canal, everything was totally rural.
Ah, right. So that's why there was no tram service. It wasn't
the
usual north-south divide.
Yeah, we'll say, Clontarf obviously had a tram service because it was an urban area that developed fairly well and it was fairly wealthy. Drumcondra had a tram service which developed slowly. It ran as far as Talca Bridge up to 1900. And when the system was electrified, it was extended up to Whitehall, where the former Garda station is now. It never went beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And in Glasnevin, it went up to the top of what was known as Washerwoman's Hill and it stopped outside the gates of the convent. That wasn't very extensive. There was more extensive service up the North Circular Road as far as the junction of Infirmary Road, stopped at the park gates. But that was a well-developed area at that time.
Yeah. Now, and of course, when we're talking about a tram, because you did mention electrification there, before electrification, we also had an extensive network of horse-drawn trams. Was that the case?
There was indeed. The first ones ran from College Green to Terenure in 1872. That terminus was extended up to Nelson Pillar. And the tram services could be greatly improved after 1880 because O'Connell Bridge, or Carlisle Bridge as it was known, was very narrow. And the bridge was rebuilt and widened in 1880 to the full width of the street. So it enabled them to put in extra tram tracks.
Mm.
And that was a great help.
Where were all the horses kept?
They were kept at the depots. There were stables in all the depots. And it took about 8 horses at a minimum for each tram. They were only allowed to do a certain amount of work every day. They were changed regularly. They were fed. There was a vet to look after them. And it has been said, and it's probably true, they were better looked after than the men.
Yes. And how, I mean, how many tram carriages would a horse be able to pull, or was it just one?
One.
Just one, right, okay. So
2 horses to the tram. You had trace horses then at very steep hills. For instance, before Lord Edward Street was built, the Inchicore trams went up through Castle Street. And obviously that was a very steep pull up. And there was a trace horse to pull the tram up there with the other two horses.
Right, okay.
There were a few other places in the city where that happened as well.
Yeah. So would that tram service then, if you're only having one carriage at a time, would it have had to be very regular?
It was according to the anticipated traffic on the route. Some of them were more frequent than others. And obviously ones like the Turn-in-Your line or the line to Sandymount via Bath Avenue, which went out via Mount Street, that was fairly frequent, as were ones to Donnybrook. Drumcondra wouldn't have been very important at that time, nor Glasnevin. The Glasnevin trams only ran as far as where the church is now at Botanic Avenue.
Yeah. Now, when obviously, electrification came along, and you know there was no need for the horses anymore. In the era of electrification, were they still in the process of widening the tram network?
They were. The tram network, oddly enough, it had its impetus for electrification not from the Dublin Company at all. There was a tramway company that ran from the junction of Haddington Road and Northumberland Road out to Dalkey. It ran in three sections, and it was acquired, or the three sections were acquired in 1892 by the Bristol-based Imperial Tramways. They appointed a man named Clifton Robinson as manager and engineer. He was some live wire, and he got about it straight away, and he electrified the whole lot and opened up for business in May 1896 between Haddington Road and Dalkey. It was an instant success.
Yeah.
And William Martin Murphy, who was the head man in the W United Tramways at that time, he took fright. He bought out the Dublin Southern District and he set about electrifying the city tramways. And the whole thing was done within 4.5 years.
That's some achievement.
It was a great achievement, an incredible achievement.
Again, how long it took them to just unite the two lines we have now. The other, which I didn't realise, is that the trams were built in Ireland.
Yes. The W United Tramways Company came into being in 1881 as a result of the amalgamation of three other companies. And in 1882, they set up the Spa Road Workshops, which repaired and built trams. And trams were built there up to 1936 and buses from 1925 onwards. And the standard of craftsmanship there was fantastic.
Mm. Now, was the demise of the tram, was it gradual or very sudden?
It was intended to be very sudden. What happened was there was a change of management in the W United in 1936, and the new management were very bus-minded. Now, as well as that, buses had been making inroads onto trams in various places in the previous 10 years, and some systems were abandoned completely. And the W United Tramways decided they would replace all their trams by 1941. They intended to do it in 5 years. And they did get rid of about 220 trams with an equal number of buses.
Mm.
Now, these were very good buses. There were diesel-engined Leyland Titans, which were both successful and long-lived. They were stopped by the war. And the result was that about 118 trams remained, and they were running on the Turn-in-Your, Dartry and Dalkey lines.
Right.
And the Turn-in-Your lines closed in 1948 and the Dalkey line in 1949. And that left the Hill of Howth on its own.
Yeah.
And that lasted another 10 years. And the closure of that was a very sad affair.
Yeah.
They did not see the potential there.
Yeah, and that was the end of it. Ollie in Limerick has texted him to say, my grandfather, James Lynch, drove the number 55 tram. His dad drove one of the horse trams when they were used. My word. Louise in Sutton says, my mother used to go to school in town in what they called the submarine, a tram that could go through the floods in Clontarf before the seafront was there.
Yes, that was number 80. It was a tram, four-wheel tram, that had its motors above the axles so that they wouldn't get wet.
Huh.
And it could carry some passengers, and it could also tow trams that had become disabled in the floods.
The bus routes then that we have now, and the numbers for those bus routes, were they are they in large part the routes of the original tramways?
Yes, most of the tram route numbers were transferred to the buses. They were extended, obviously, afterwards.
Mm.
The route numbers had come in 1918 in place of the symbols, which were in use up to that time. And if you look at a map, they were numbered on the outer termini in clockwise sequence, from Sandymount round to Dalkey and so on, and right round to 31, which is the highest number in Howth.
The Lewis, have you been on it? Have you had a look at it?
I was very privileged to be invited to travel on a Lewis tram to Broombridge last Tuesday, which I enjoyed immensely. Mm. And I congratulate them also on the fact that the depot at Broombridge has been named Hamilton Depot in memory of Sir William Rowan Hamilton, the man who scratched the famous formula on the bridge at Broombridge for the Quaternions.
Michael, thank you very much for coming in to speak with us today. That's Michael Corcoran there. He's president of the Transport Museum Society of Ireland.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.